Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Hello, and thank you for joining me. Today, I will start a three-week series of timely tidbits, stories that have been accumulating in a pile on my desk. Some aren't so timely anymore, and some are not really tidbits, but they are all contain good, solid information that I want to share with you. So today, it's Timely Tidbits Part 1. You'll hear about a blind surfer, retinal imaging, a guide dog named Nadine, and about touch tours in Philadelphia. That first article about the blind surfer, the headline reads, "A Blind Surfer Aims for the Perfect Wave," and it was written by Pam Cragen from the San Diego Union-Tribune. The article says, for most surfers, it's hard enough finding that perfect mix of board, beach, balance, and brute strength to battle the waves. Now imagine you're doing it with no eyes or legs. Among the competitors in last December's World Adaptive Surfing Championship was San Diego area surfer Scott Leeson, who lost his sight to a robber's bullet about 23 years ago. The 60-year-old City Heights man, this is in San Diego, practices his moves at the shores, and his unique surfing style usually draws a small but fascinated crowd of onlookers. His guide dog Snickers, a chocolate lab, has his portrait on Leeson's custom-made board. Leeson has been blind since about 1993, when a robber came into the Circle K market where he worked and shot him in the face. He lost his eyes and his sense of smell, but has recaptured his spirit with surfing, water skiing, and Ironman triathlons. Surfers from several countries will be in La Jolla this weekend for the competition. And as I said, this is probably from last year, about a year ago now. The article continues, wearing a modified crash helmet and a black rash guard printed with the words, "Caution, blind surfer," he walks into the waves with his board. The red, white, and blue board is fitted with raised knobs to indicate where he should stand for proper balance. It's decorated with a drawing of his guide dog, Snickers, a boisterous 6-year-old chocolate lab. Fitted with a GoPro camera and a waterproof radio receiver, Larson's helmet was designed by his longtime volunteer coach, Pat Weber, of the San Diego Surfing Academy. He stands on the beach and shouts commands into a handheld walkie-talkie. They sound like this. Walk, walk, walk. Wave in 3, 2, 1. Get up on your board. Paddle, paddle, paddle. Sit up. Turn right. Go, go, go. At the competition, Leeson has to surf without his training helmet. A guide in the water can offer verbal directions, but no physical assistance. Leeson, who began surfing at the age of 10 in Newport Beach, said he has no fear of the water, and his ears help him gauge the waves as they approach. But he admits that surfing without sight can be tiring and difficult. During the last year's competition, his audio receiver shorted out, and he often ended up facing the wrong direction or drifting too far out into the watery turf, the turf that belongs to the able-bodied surfers. Some days he catches a few waves, some days he doesn't. Either way, he's stoked. A quote, "It's cool being out there on the water," he said with a cheery smile. "Lots of times I don't get up on the board at all, but when I do, it's awesome. Exercise is the key to life." A Navy veteran, Leeson was 37 and newly divorced when he lost his construction job in 1992. His father offered him a place to stay in La Quinta, where he moved the following spring in hopes of landing a landscaping job with the city. To pay the bills in the meantime, he worked on the cash register at the Circle K market. Leeson was working in the graveyard shift at 2 a.m. on July 4th, 1993, when two gang members walked through the doors. Here's a quote. "One guy put his back against the glass doors and said to me, 'What are you looking at?' So I looked away and saw the other guy to my left, ordering a customer down on the ground. I opened the cash drawer and put my hands up, and the next thing I remember was a white flash and the customer saying, 'He's shot.' As the robbers left the store, one of them fired a single 9mm bullet that passed through Leeson's left temple and exited through his right eye socket. The bullet didn't damage Leeson's brain, but he lost both eyes as well as his sense of smell. For the next year, Leeson said he was buoyed by the support he received from friends, co-workers, and organizations like the Braille Institute and Junior Blind of America, which gave him free classes in reading, writing, typing, cooking, and other life skills. At first, he was able to focus on his recovery, but after a while, he became depressed, fell in with some old friends and bad habits, and went, as he said, down the rabbit hole. In my journey, I traveled every road, wrong and right. But when I found the Challenged Athletes Foundation, my life changed forever, he said. When I came to them, I was a fat, angry victim. But now I follow my mantra to never lose sight of your hopes and dreams. Challenged Athletes, that's the organization he mentioned before, Challenged Athletes Foundation, is better known as CAF. It provides training, equipment, and competition fees to disabled athletes. Through its Operation Rebound program for veterans, Leeson received multiple grants to begin training and competing again in water skiing, wakeboarding, triathlons, and surfing. Over the past 2 years, Leeson has racked up an impressive string of sporting achievements. Last year, with his training partner, Brian McGoldrick, he completed the Ironman Arizona in 16 hours, 12 minutes. In October, he won 2 silver medals at the USA Water Skis 2016 Disabled Nationals. Since the La Jolla-based International Surfing Association launched the adaptive competition last year, the sport has grown dramatically around the world. Last year, the competition was open to all disabled surfers in the region. To accommodate growing demand from other countries, all of this year's competitors arrived in 8-member teams who qualified at new adaptive surfing championships in their own countries. And these included Brazil, Chile, Australia, France, and South Africa. To expand opportunities for women surfers, each team is required to have at least one female athlete. The ISA president, Fernando Aguirre, said he's gratified not just by the growing international interest in the sport, but also by the opportunities it has created for disabled people in countries where their options might otherwise be limited. Here's a quote for you. "This has created an international sport that didn't exist before, and also has created a domino effect of improving life for millions around the world," Aguirre said. "Suddenly, the ocean is this wonderful playground where people with limited or different abilities have the chance to play like everyone else. It's empowering people who, throughout history, have been disempowered." For more than 50 years, the ISA has organized, governed, and promoted international surfing competitions. This year, the ISA was successful in getting surfing recognized as an official Olympic sport. This will begin with the Tokyo Olympics in the year 2020. Aguirre said his next goal is to get adaptive surfing recognized by the Paralympic Games, hopefully for 2020 or maybe 2024. Because more professional athletes with different abilities are competing this year, Aguirre said 2 new divisions have been added. One is for visually impaired athletes like Leeson. The other is for surfers who ride standing on their boards as opposed to laying on the board or riding in a kneeling position. San Diego resident Danielle, they call her Danny Burt, who lost her right leg in a 2004 motorcycle accident on Palomar Mountain, is among the surfers who will compete in the new standing division. Burt, who works as a physical therapist at Sharp Memorial Hospital, was crowned the 2016 U.S. Adaptive Surfing Champion in the standing, Level 2 category. At the inaugural championship in La Jolla in September of 2015, Leeson was one of only 2 blind surfers in the contest. This year, he will face 7 others from around the world. A quote from him, "I am nervous as hell. I feel the pressure of representing the U.S. as the first blind surfing champion. but it's also an honor and a privilege. Once again, the story is out of San Diego and referring to San Diego surfer Scott Leeson. We wish him well. The next article in this timely tidbits program came from the WebMD.com website, and it's all about retinal imaging. This will give you an overview of all the tests that are available. Retinal imaging uses special cameras and scanners to make magnified images or pictures of the back of your eye. This part includes the retina. It's the part of the eye that's most responsible for your vision. Common imaging methods include the following four things. First of all, color or black and white photography. A camera magnifies the back of your eye and makes pictures. The second common imaging method would be optical coherence tomography. This is abbreviated OCT. A scanner uses light waves to form an image of the retina on a computer screen. And once again, that's OCT, optical coherence tomography. Another common imaging method is ultrasound, and this test uses sound waves to form the image. And the final test they're mentioning here is the angiogram. This is when a dye is injected into your arm, and the dye flows through your blood to the blood vessels in your eye. The dye makes the blood vessels in your eye easier to see as your doctor looks at your eyes through the camera. A test called fundus autofluorescence is sometimes used. Special lighting lets the doctor see microscopic changes in your eye that are caused by certain conditions. Now, the big question is, why is it done? These tests help doctors find and treat eye problems. Doctors can see if a disease is getting worse, or they can see if treatment is working. You may need retinal image if you have diabetes or diabetic retinopathy. Either of these conditions, can lead to poor vision and even blindness. A test can help your doctor see if your treatment is working. You might also need retinal imaging if your doctor thinks you have wet macular degeneration. This can lead to vision loss. Tests can help find leaky blood vessels in your eye or blood vessels that are not normal, which are a part of this disease. Another need might be if your vision is getting worse and your doctor wants to find out why. Eye exams, including retinal imaging, may help your doctor find a problem before it has a chance to get worse, and this gives you a better chance of protecting your vision. Retinal imaging should not take the place, however, of a complete eye exam. Now, how to prepare for retinal imaging. If you know that the doctor will use drops to widen or dilate your pupils, think about having someone else there to drive you home. The drops make your eyes very sensitive to light. You may not be able to see well for a few hours. If you have sunglasses, take them with you to wear on the way home. If you wear contact lenses, you may want to take your eyeglasses with you. And before and while you're preparing for these tests, you should tell your doctor if you are or might be pregnant or are breastfeeding. The dye used in an angiogram may harm the fetus. The dye can also pass on to a baby through breast milk. You should also tell your doctor if you have any health problems, including glaucoma, or if you are taking any medicines, include any over-the-counter medicines or herbs or other supplements. You should also tell your doctor if you are allergic to any medicines, including those dilating eye drops. Talk to your doctor about any concerns you have regarding the need for the test, what its risks might be, how it will be done, or what the results may mean. Now, the retinal imaging tests, how are they done? How is it done? Retinal imaging tests are done in a hospital or doctor's office by an ophthalmologist or an optometrist. For some tests, the doctor will first use eye drops to widen or dilate your pupils. You will sit and wait for about a half an hour for the drops to take effect. For most tests, you'll sit in a chair facing the camera. You'll place your chin on a chin rest, and you'll brace your forehead against a bar to keep it still. Keep your mouth closed, open your eyes as wide as you can, and stare straight ahead. You can breathe and blink normally while the camera photographs or scans your eyes. This only takes a few minutes to take the pictures. If you're going to have an angiogram, Before an angiogram, a dye is injected into your vein. An IV needle is placed in a vein in your arm, and the dye is injected. It only takes a few seconds for the dye to be visible in the blood vessels in your eyes. Then photos are taken as the dye enters the eyes, and this test, the overall test, takes about 30 minutes. If you're scheduled to have an eye ultrasound, eyes closed, you sit in a chair with your eyes closed. The doctor puts ultrasound gel on your eyelid, and then he or she gently moves a small ultrasound wand against your eyelid. If you're having the ultrasound with your eyes open, eye drops will be used to numb your eyes. The doctor moves the ultrasound wand against the front surface of your eye. And remember, your eyes are numbed in this procedure. How it feels. The tests themselves don't cause pain or discomfort. For some tests, very bright light may shine in your eye. If your eyes have been dilated, they will be very sensitive to light for several hours. Your vision may be a little blurry. The dye used in an angiogram may cause a metallic taste in your mouth. You may also have mild nausea and a brief feeling of warmth. Your urine may be orange for a day or two if you have the dye that's used in angiograms. You always wonder about the risk. In some people, the dilating eye drops can cause an allergic reaction. Also, the dye used in an angiogram may upset your stomach and you may feel flushed. These symptoms pass quickly. If you're pregnant, talk to your doctor about possible risks to your baby. Some people are allergic to the dye. Tell your doctor if you feel lightheaded or if you need to vomit or if you feel itchy after the dye is injected. Very rarely, a person may have a serious allergic reaction and might need emergency care. Now, about the results from these tests, the pictures from retinal imaging tests will help your doctor look for problems and decide on the proper treatment. If everything looks healthy back there, they consider it a normal test and you can move on. If anything is abnormal, there might be one of the following four things. There might be a mole or a cyst or some other problem on the back of the eye. A second possibility, there are blocked or leaking blood vessels in the eye. A third possibility, the layer of nerves called the retinal nerve fiber layer is injured, or it might even be getting a little thin. Or there are changes in the natural coloring of the back of the eye. These are possible abnormalities that might be determined by retinal imaging. What affects the test? You may not be able to have the test, or the results may not be helpful if you have cataracts, or if the dilating drops don't widen your pupils enough, or if you aren't able to keep your eyes wide open and stare straight ahead during the test, or if you aren't able to hold still during the test. The final part of this article is things to think about. The dyes used in angiograms can be passed on through breast milk. This means that moms will need to stop breastfeeding for a day or two after the test. Use a breast pump to empty your breasts and get rid of the milk until it's safe to start breastfeeding again. And next, this is accompanied by a little disclaimer from HealthWise, which is a division of WebMD. This information is not intended to replace the advice of your doctor. HealthWise disclaims any liability for the decisions you make based on this information. This article at WebMD was reviewed by Dr. Patrice Burgess and Dr. Christopher Rudnitsky. The next article, as promised, I would be introducing you to a guide dog named Nadine. This is actually, Nadine is the hit of a whole new book. I'll describe the cover of the book for you. The title is Nadine, My Funny and Trusty Guide Dog. It was written by Carol Chiodo Fleischman, illustrated by Stephanie Ford. The front of the book shows Nadine in big red letters, My Funny and Trusty Guide Dog, in lowercase letters. The background is white puffy clouds on a blue sky, and the little girl in the picture is walking up a big snowbank. She is wearing a red coat, a reddish purple coat, actually. She has a bouncy ponytail sticking out of the back of her head. It's covered by a green hat, And around her neck is a scarf, a knit scarf. It's a long, long green knit scarf. It sort of is waving out behind her coat. She's also wearing green gloves and green, like, leggings. She has a blue pleated skirt on. Along with her, with a harness, is Nadine, the guide dog, who is, it looks like a black lab to me. Well, this is a book that's written for kids. It was suggested in one of the comments that it's for like grades K through 4. And once again, the title, Nadine, N-A-D-I-N-E, My Funny and Trusty Guide Dog. The relationship, this is from the inside flap of the book, by the way, the relationship between a blind person and her canine companion is explored in this charming and informative tale of a playful young dog. This true story, set during the onset of a major snowstorm, demonstrates the mixture of serious work ethic and playfulness that these valuable animals often possess. Nadine, the working dog, never forgets her very important job as the eyes for her owner, but, like any dog, she enjoys playing with her mistress. Her antics are funny and unpredictable. Nadine gleefully pulls smelly laundry out of the hamper, hides under furniture, and frolics about when it comes time to get her harness on. Will Nadine prove herself trustworthy and reliable on their first outing as a team? Follow along as author Carol Chiodo Fleischman takes young readers on the journey with her, just as she experienced it with the real Nadine many years ago. Well, about the author, Carol Chiodo Fleischman is a professional writer from Niagara Falls, New York, so she certainly does know about snowstorms, and she just happens to be legally blind. Since 1992, she has used a guide dog for mobility, and her articles frequently focus on life as a visually impaired person, especially the joys and challenges of working with a guide dog. Her writing has appeared in books, magazines, and newspapers, including the New York Times Syndicate, Guideposts, the Buffalo News, the Simon & Schuster Short Prose Reader, and Chicken Soup for the Soul. She has been a member of the Association of Professional Women Writers for more than 20 years. Fleischman volunteers with Guild Care, leading a story hour for seniors with failing sight. She is an advocate for living with assistance partners and is an active and eloquent speaker at schools, libraries, and other organizations on the topic of life with an assistance dog. She was given the Best Article of the Year award by the International Association of Assistance Dog Partners in 1998, and she spoke at a 2007 International Association of Assistance Dog Partners conference in Baltimore. She and her husband share their home in Niagara Falls, New York, with her trusted guide dog. And now finally, a story about those touch tours. This comes from the section Food for Thought from NPR. Touch tours help the blind experience Philadelphia's historic food scene. This was published in May of last year by Nima Roshania. Philadelphia's historic Italian market is known for its cheeses, meats, fresh pastas, and chocolate. Running 10 city blocks through South Philadelphia, it's one of the oldest and largest open-air markets in the country. But what would a tour through this vibrant neighborhood be like without the ability to see? Well, that's where Philly Touch Tours comes in. The guide company specializes in offering hands-on tours of Philadelphia. On a recent Tuesday afternoon, tour guide Andy Maunder stops everyone at a street corner to set the scene for the group. Their first stop is Superior Pasta, which sells the freshly made stuff. Here's a quote. "You can hear right away the buzz of the freezers on the right-hand side of the store," said Trish Maunder, Andy's wife, and one of the co-founders of Philly Touch Tours. She describes the narrow, crammed shop as they enter, and then introduces everyone to the owner, Joe Lamano. Lamano quickly cranks up his pasta machine and launches into an explanation about different types of pasta and the merits of homemade versus store-bought. And don't even get him started on the idea of gluten-free pasta. Well, once he churns the pasta out, he passes raw pieces around to the group so they can hold it and smell it, and probably taste it, too. The two-hour tour includes visits to a chocolate shop, to a purveyor of olive oils and vinegars, a cheesemonger, and a butcher. They usually run over the allotted time, Trish Maunder says, because people enjoy lingering, trying samples, or returning to their favorite store at the end of the tour to buy something. She says she first started thinking about ways to integrate sensory experiences when her now-grown daughter was born. A quote, "My husband Andy and I gave birth to a child who was born blind. That was 30 years ago," she says. "As an artist and an art educator, it was a bit of a shock at first, and I think we got our heads around it by thinking, how else do we interpret our world?" Last year, she co-founded Philly Touch Tours with Austin Serafin, a computer programmer who was born blind. He's been coding since he was 7 and has spent his career working to make technology accessible to blind people. As an accessibility consultant, he helps companies make their apps work for the visually impaired. The group started off by offering hands-on tours of the Ancient Egypt exhibit at the University of Pennsylvania Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology. The results surprised even the most seasoned curators, especially when a blind guest discovered that the museum's monumental sphinx had ribs. A quote, "The docents who had been working there for 20 years did not know that," said Serafin. "No one had ever been able to touch it before." Serafin and Maunder said they're hoping to expand Philly Touch Tours to more parts of the city and start offering training to cultural institutions on how to reach out to people who are visually impaired. Now, one of these tour participants actually said about the tour, "It's very good being a person who's blind, knowing a little more about the things that are around me," she says. "Most of us have been to the Italian market before, but never in this way. When we are given more description, the aroma of the different spices, the flowers, the fruits, and things we've come across today." Well, now the author of the story, Nima Roshania, is an associate editor with NPR member station WHYY in Philadelphia, where a version of this story first ran. And as a quote to end the story, "Seeing might be believing, but when you touch, you know." And once again, this is Philly Touch Tours, P-H-I-L-L-Y, like Philadelphia, phillytouchtours.com. And the founders, once again, were Trish Maunder and Austin Serafin, founders of the Philly Touch Tours. Well, to end today's timely tidbit program, I have a familiar quote for you. It's, "Seeing is believing." This has been changed a little bit by those touch tour folks in Philadelphia. They now say, as I just mentioned, "Seeing is believing, but when you touch, you know." Thank you for listening, and I do hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.